The Ain't No Fang Podcast. From Arizona Sports, Ain't No Fang.
Welcome into the Ain't No Fang Podcast with Arizona Sports, Alex Weiner, Mitch Fereldis. And while we could be spending the entire podcast previewing opening day, the season ahead, there is far too much news to get to do that and only that. So we're going to kind of combine it a little bit. We're going to start with sort of the latest news in Diamondbacks land, and then we'll kind of get to what to look forward to with the season because, oh boy, at the buzzer, less than 48 hours before the Diamondbacks were to take, or actually, was it less than 48 hours? About 48 hours.
It was very, very darn close to under 2 days remaining until the start of the season.
The Arizona Diamondbacks have reportedly agreed to terms with left-handed pitcher Jordan Montgomery, who was one of the... There we go. Round of applause for the Diamondbacks capping off an offseason.
Mike Hazen at the buzzer. Man, this felt like a piece that they could have added months ago, and instead it feels like they're getting him at a discount. And I get it, $25 million for a season is a lot of money, but he was projected to at least hit in the 30 range, like compared to what Blake Snell got this offseason, right? And it's the same agency, obviously, headed by Scott Boras. This feels like a steal, almost, that I saw. I think it was Keith Law reacted to the news, and he said 29 other teams should be hanging their head in shame.
And Paul Sewald reacted to that tweet
saying,
not us.
Not the winners, though.
So to set this up, yeah, Jordan Montgomery, 31 years old, left-handed pitcher, who kind of went into the offseason as one of the big four free agents under Scott Boras, with Cody Bellinger, Blake Snell, and Matt Chapman, all of whom signed pretty late in the offseason. Obviously, Montgomery, the latest, is now he finally... It's not even official yet as of Wednesday morning, but he's reportedly joining the Diamondbacks mere hours before opening day, it seems. And, you mentioned it. $25 million for 2024. There is a reported vesting option for 2025, which he can opt into or opt out of if he gets 10 starts in 2025. If it's 10 starts this year, it goes to $20 million. If it's 18 starts, he gets an extra $2.5 million. If he goes to 23 starts, it's an extra $2.5 million and can get up to $25 million again. So,
and just generally speaking, based on his stats, we'll get into it in a second, it seems like easy numbers for him to get to, right?
He has been about as dependable and durable as a starting pitcher has been in the past three seasons.
Yep.
And that is with a lot of change because, you remember, in 2021, he was with the Yankees. In the middle of 2022, he gets traded from the Yankees to the Cardinals. In the middle of 2023, he gets traded from the Cardinals to the Rangers. And then he's huge for them down the stretch in the postseason. Terrific in the ALCS. He starts a World Series game against the Diamondbacks, which was the only D-backs win. That was in Arlington. Not that he threw particularly poorly in that game. And he pitched amazing against the Diamondbacks earlier in the season. So that is who you're getting. And he's somebody who is, with all that change, has started 30-plus games in each of the past 3 years. He's had an ERA sub 4 in each of the past 3 years, 3.20 last year. It's continuously gotten better. And while he's not like a huge strikeout guy who's going to pump 95, 96, he is somebody who limits hard contact pretty well, and he doesn't walk a ton of guys. Kind of a very different profile from what the Giants got in Blake Snell, essentially. So that is somebody who you're adding to not be your ace, but in the middle of a rotation with Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly, when healthy Eduardo Rodriguez, who we'll talk about a little bit since he's going to start on the injured list with a lat strain, Jordan Montgomery, and then Brandon Font. That's your five when you're healthy. That's pretty
darn
deep.
Feels good to me.
That's pretty darn deep.
I mean, even think about the postseason. Like, no disrespect to Font, but he's kind of the one that gets cut off at the time when you go down to four starters in the rotation. And you've got Gallen, Kelly, Eduardo Rodriguez when healthy, and Jordan Montgomery. That feels way better than anything we got out of the Diamondbacks rotation last postseason. So I, already thinking that far ahead, feel way more confident about this team when the postseason rolls around.
And just for a depth perspective, because we're already going to have a situation where neither Montgomery or Rodriguez will start the year in the rotation.
Yes.
But, you know, they feel comfortable with Tommy Henry and Ryan Nelson to hold down the fort a little bit. And then eventually you'll have your five guys. It may not stay that way. Obviously, pitching can fluctuate a little bit. Guys get hurt. That happens. But they have even more depth to turn from, where you're not like digging into the minor leagues so early. You can kind of take your time with some guys who are younger, and as we mentioned, when fully healthy, if you're going into the postseason with this as your potential rotation, if it's all intact, then you're looking at, you know, maybe Brandon Fott as a long man, but obviously there's a long way to go before to getting to that. But this feels like a home run as far as being able to, for the value that you are giving out, to get somebody of Jordan Montgomery's caliber based on what people thought he would get in the beginning of the offseason, it's an incredible win. And you're right with that Keith Law tweet because, oh my God, there are so many teams who it felt like more of a pressing need to have Jordan Montgomery be in their rotation.
A reunion with the Yankees felt like the most popular one in the last couple
sure.
of weeks.
Sure, the Red Sox have been linked to him many times in the offseason, but have not pulled the trigger and right. will not get to. I think of the Mets as a team that, you know, Kodai Senga is down, but they added J.D. Martinez and they have a lineup
feels
that seems
like
ready to go.
They still want to compete. Yeah.
Exactly. There's just so many teams out there that could have used him. And for the Diamondbacks who, you know, when healthy, you'd think, you know, a Gallen, Kelly, Rodriguez fought Nelson or Henry rotation could do the trick. Now you're adding even more of a strength to the rotation that was already looked pretty well upon.
So it's interesting because I think about the rotation and I think about Gallen, I think about Kelly, Montgomery, Rodriguez when he's in, and Brandon Pfaadt. They don't really all throw that hard, if I'm thinking about it correctly.
Like, yeah, no Pfaadt one really, is kind of the hardest thrower.
He gets to 96 mm-hmm. if he gets into his peak. So like these guys in this rotation are topping out at like at most 93, 94, but they've now got a much better defense behind them in the infield. We already know about the outfield defense and how valuable it has become. The infield defense, with the addition of Eugenio Suarez now at the corner, Geraldo Perdomo established as the everyday shortstop, Ketel Marte playing where he wants to at second base, and then we don't need to say much about Christian Walker. Gabby Moreno's a Gold Glover. Mm-hmm. This defense is set up perfectly to match what this rotation does best, which is force weak contact on the ground and not a ton of fly ball outs. So if the ball were to somehow escape the infield, you have great defense behind those four to set you up and not allow too many extra base hits. And then at the same time, anything hit in the infield almost feels like a guaranteed out at this point.
Yeah, and they have some fly ball pitchers in the staff, obviously, but and you mentioned the outfield being so good. It's a very key point what you make because, you know, when you look at the Diamondbacks, it's like, okay, their lineup compared to this lineup, their rotation compared to this rotation, which mm-hmm. we will do in a second. The big advantage that they have over other contending teams is defense and base running. That was the case last year for much of the season. When they were at their best, those were easy strengths for them, mm-hmm. and it should be going forward. And, you know, for Jordan Montgomery now is somebody who's going to, you know, get the ball on the ground a decent amount. You're totally right. And he's going to work with Gabby Moreno, who's continuing to, you know, establish himself as somebody who is not only a stellar defender at throwing guys out, but in all the other details of being an everyday catcher, including planning with your pitcher, game calling, all that stuff. So, yeah, this feels like if you are a pitcher, this is a pretty good spot to land in, given everything that you were handed to. Not to mm-hmm. mention you get to work with Brent Strom.
Yes.
And so that's not a bad incentive either.
There's a lot of praise around Brent Strom ever since he took the Diamondbacks job. Of course, he kind of helped revolutionize the Astros pitching staff to what it is today and everything he's done so far in Arizona, specifically with Brandon Pfaadt tweaking how his approach to every start has gone. It's very tangible. You can see the improvement of this pitching staff with Brent Strom leading the helm.
Absolutely. And even some of the younger guys, like Tommy Henry and Ryan Nelson, have both had really solid camps. Henry more recently, last couple starts, he's been really good, mm-hmm. making some lower body adjustments. Ryan Nelson has been in camp pretty much the entire offseason, and he had about as good of a spring training as anybody in the rotation. And so now those guys are going to be depth pieces potentially for you, or maybe, I don't know what they want to do with them.
Yeah.
This is all very fresh. The reports happened last night, and we'll get some more clarity today. So, yeah, definitely.
If,
still
if you're
to
listening
to
this now, by the way, I know Wolf and Luke are set to have Mike Hazen on, the GM, at 11:45. Now, as we mentioned, as of right now, this is not an official deal, but we presume this to be either close to official or official by the time that you're listening to this. So if you haven't heard Mike Hazen yet, him on with Wolf and Luke, I'm sure provides a lot more clarity as to how they were able to land Montgomery at the 11th hour, basically.
Fantastic plug. And there will also be more content coming later as Mike Hazen is scheduled to speak to the media at Ooh. Chase Field later today.
Follow so. Alex J. Weiner on Twitter. He's got the hookups, man. He's got you. He's got you locked in when it comes to the Diamondbacks. I'm telling you. He's so good at what he does. Alex J. Weiner on Twitter or X.
Not what I was going for, but I do appreciate it. Let's go over what this rotation, how it kind of stacks up in the major leagues.
Do you want to start with what it's set to be for right now or what it will be when it's all fully healthy?
Let's keep that entire picture kind of intact.
Okay.
we know what it is right now. It's going to be Gallen, Kelly. Tommy Henry is set up for the third game of the season.
Yes.
Brandon Pfaadt set up for the fourth game of the season. That's how it was lined up. Rodriguez was going to be the third starter. He's going
to
start on the
IL.
Easy
to just put Tommy in the three slot.
He lined up there really nicely, and Nelson was lined up for the fifth start fairly nicely. He's going to have to throw some batters at Salt River Fields to stay sharp. But yes, that's where we're looking at. We'll see, obviously, you know, the competition in camp for who's going to be the fifth starter kind of continues to rage on now, because if Montgomery is ready before Erod,
that's a good point.
They're going to have to move somebody to something else unless they go with six men, which I don't think they want to take days away from Zach Allen or Mo Kelly starting games. I know they had huge workloads last year, but those are still guys they're going to lean on this year. So we'll see. But let's take that entire picture into account.
Okay.
FanGraphs ranks each rotation, and they jumped the Diamondbacks up to fourth in the major leagues.
Behind who, if you don't mind me asking?
Let's go over it.
Okay.
The Atlanta Braves, they have at three.
Three.
So that is Spencer Strider, Max Fried, Charlie Morton, Chris Sale, and then
Bryce Elder was an all-star last year.
But he's not starting in the major leagues.
A.J. Smith-Shawver, they gave him a couple of reps last year.
Ronaldo Lopez is
They're now plugging him as a starter again. Okay.
He's been very good as a reliever the last few years. He was kind of up and down as a starter earlier in his career. He's going to be a starter again.
Okay.
So that's what you're looking at with Atlanta. Again, Strider, Fried, Morton is very good top four, but do the Diamondbacks have sort of the advantage behind them? It depends what you get out of Chris Sale.
Yes.
The Phillies, Wheeler, Nola, we remember them from the postseason. Taijuan Walker, who's a little banged up right now, and then Ranger Suarez, Christopher Sanchez, and
they're
then
really high on Christopher Sanchez too, based on how they handled him in the postseason, especially putting him in those high leverage situations. Like, I think they expect a big jump out of Sanchez, the young lefty that they have.
Absolutely, and again, top two, as good as they come in the major leagues. And then you have the Dodgers at one.
That's fair.
We talked about it on the NL West preview pod. When this rotation is healthy, then you're looking at like a Glasnow, Yamamoto, Buehler, Kershaw, Bobby Miller, with like Gavin Stone, Dustin May, James Paxton, is like all guys who are also in the mix there.
And they're adding a Cy Young candidate right-hander, not this year, but next year.
Right.
He just also happens to be their designated hitter.
Right. They're not healthy.
No.
That is going to be the question with the Dodgers all season long.
Mm-hmm.
Yamamoto got obviously danged in his first start. It's a little different.
Yeah,
you know, we'll see. Let's give it a few. Let's wait
for a park adjustment. That is no disrespect to the people of Seoul, but that was a rather small park that they were playing in compared to some of the MLB parks.
Yeah, we'll see. If by the end of April is like looks not great, then it's time to okay, what is going on here? But
100%.
Yeah, when fully healthy, that I can see being obviously the best rotation in the major leagues, but it's not there yet. We don't know if it'll get there. So that's sort of a wait and see.
Mm-hmm.
With the Diamondbacks, obviously it's not the full form of the rotation right now as it's going to be in theory, but there seems like more of like, okay, this is going to happen sooner rather than later, as opposed to what the Dodgers are looking at, where it's going to be more in the second half of the season. Eduardo Rodriguez, kind of an update on him. When he got the MRI results, he was pretty surprised because he didn't think it was as bad as the results said it was, with it being a strain. He doesn't anticipate missing too much time.
Right.
The earlier he can get up baseball and start throwing again, the better, because then he can kind of build himself back up to be ready for it. So, you know, we'll see. It's, you know, not something that's going to cost him the first half of the season necessarily.
Maybe a month or so, if anything.
Right. And that's speculation. We'll see exactly. Yeah. But it's not expected to be particularly deep into the season. And then Montgomery is just about building up. So, you know, how many starts will he need to get there? How many live bullpen sessions at Salt River? That's something that we're going to learn a lot more of in the next, you know, couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it seems like, you know, if you told me by the end of April they will have their full rotation, that seems more believable than, you know, some other teams who are battling some more serious injury stuff.
Right. I agree with that.
And then when you look behind them, you know, the Giants are really interesting because it's the Webb, Snell, Cobb, Harrison, Robbie Ray group that, again, when fully healthy, that's pretty dangerous.
Jordan Hicks will be the difference for that rotation. I think we've got, if you're looking at the Giants, they've clearly established 1-2 with Webb, Snell, whenever Snell's ready to enter that rotation. Kyle Harrison is still very young, very raw. We've talked about him a lot in the NOS preview pod. You don't have Robbie Ray for right now. You don't have Alex Cobb for right now. They could take half of the season before they fully return. Jordan Hicks is getting stretched out as a starter for, to my knowledge, the first time in his Major League Baseball career after some up and down, but lately more up appearances as a high leverage reliever for St. Louis and then Toronto for half of last year. He's going to make the difference for that rotation going forward just because this is also new to him. And he's now on a team that, when you look at the roster and the way things are set up in the NL West, they're very clearly trying to compete for the division or a wild card spot this year.
So he started a little bit for the Cardinals a few years ago, but like, he's 8 career starts. This is not something. This is not something that he's like used to necessarily. So we'll see how that goes. But I guess, you know, getting back to the Diamondbacks here, it's like, where do they stack up in all this? It's right at the top. I mean, it's.
I like them in the top five. Right at the top. I don't know if I like them behind the Braves necessarily, because Chris Sale was pitching better in the latter half of his final season with the Red Sox, but ever since that 2018 season, man, he has not been able to stay on the mound whatsoever.
So probably third through fifth, if we had to like gauge it going into the season, probably.
I would think so.
Yeah.
I think where Fangraphs has him right now is a pretty solid spot. I just don't know if I agree with the Braves being ahead of the Diamondbacks right now. Because even when Sale's healthy, I don't know what we're supposed to expect out of him. I mean, he's way older than he was back in that 2018 season. I mean, way is an exaggeration. But the point being is that you put a lot of mileage on that arm. He's pitched a lot in the postseason when he was with Boston. And he was also started as a reliever and then stretched out to a starter where he became very successful with the White Sox. I don't know what we're going to get out of Chris Sale. And I don't know if that necessarily just automatically makes them a better rotation as a whole than the Diamondbacks just because of Chris Sale.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, going to like what this actually means for like looking forward to the Diamondback season, base running is a huge advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Fielding is a huge advantage. Starting pitching is now a huge advantage. That, you know, going into the offseason, you know, you still had your top two guys. Mm-hmm. Brandon Pfaadt was coming along, but now you legitimately have created one of the top five rotations in baseball, it seems like. And so,
I mean, they had a solid top two last year, and then they just added three. They added two dudes in free agency that could easily argue to be a top.
Could be a two starter on a
part
lot
of a second starter. Exactly. And then they're getting the most out of a second year. He was a rookie last year, a couple trips up and down, and has really figured it out and figured it out on the biggest stage, too. Brandon Pfaadt.
Right. Let's go to the bullpen. Because we have news there, too, unfortunately.
Because
that's Paul Sewald has an oblique strain, grade two. That's going to cost him the first chunk of the season. When asked about a timeline, he doesn't know one. They don't know one exactly. But he said he's not going to make the first road trip. He's probably not going to make the homestand after that. And then we'll see after that. So that's most of April. We'll see if it's at the beginning of May. We don't know. But for the time being, this is a bullpen that really benefited from having a set closer, a set setup man, a set seventh inning man, and then kind of working backwards from there. Mm-hmm. Troy Lovello likes to work games from the ninth inning and go up, so now he has to do that a little bit differently. He hasn't necessarily committed to Kevin Ginkle being the closer, and asked Kevin yesterday, and he said he hasn't heard anything about like being the quote-unquote closer, but it's the logical choice considering he is the setup man. He got a few saves last year. It was kind of trending in that direction that he would take over that role before the deadline, and then they get Sewald and everything kind of falls into place. So now with Paul Sewald out, it puts a little bit more pressure on this group.
100%. And the biggest reason as to why the bullpen was so successful when they were last year, in my opinion, was because of the acquisition of Sewald. And to your point about Torrey liking to work backwards from the ninth inning and setting it up backwards, it's easy when you automatically know who your ninth inning option is going to be. And we've seen Torrey Lovello as manager in the past. He's had set closers before. None of them have been stellar by any means. Like, there was the fun Fernando Rodney season in 2017.
You say fun in a way that many other people would not say fun.
Fernando Rodney season. They tried Brad Boxberger for a spin. They tried Mark Melancon a couple of years ago. This was the first time that they've truly been successful with, you are the established closer and you are going to close the games for us. I think Kevin Ginkle's got that dog in him. And we saw it in the Braves series when he's
going out.
He's staring down Ronald Acuña Jr. back to third base.
That was a little silly.
It was a little silly, but still,
but he saved that 16-13 game that marathon game. Absolutely, he was the guy who got that done.
It's critical outs to get against at the time the best team in Major League Baseball last year, and I think he's going to be able to do that again. Like, you don't trust him in high leverage situations if you don't think that he's good for high leverage situations. Right?
Yeah, and you mentioned like the most important thing for that bullpen was getting Sewald. That's probably true. But man, Kevin Gingles ascension, mm-hmm. ascension from, you know, somebody who's kind of, he was optioned earlier that year, and going and turning into what he turned into by the end of the season, I think is right up there with why the bullpen did what it was able to do. Yeah, it's going to be a little bit different. You know, they'll see if they get similar success out of Ryan Thompson. If, you know, some of the other guys, like, you know, how does Miguel Castro, Scott McGuff hold up sort of in the middle innings, somewhat late innings? Who's going to be in the seventh inning, that go-to guy?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they're going to have a long man early with Bryce Jarvis. And so it's going to be a little bit different than I'm sure they imagined. But yeah, can Kevin Ginkle be a good major league closer when given the opportunity? And then once Ewald gets healthy, they kind of slide everything back into place and click. Can it hold up? Because last year, for as good as they were for much of the season, a big problem became holding on to leads late.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we'll see what it looks like with Kevin potentially in more of a regular closer role, because we only got a snippet of that last year.
Right.
But he is the logical choice, and it's going to be a great opportunity for him and for the organization to see, okay, could this guy maybe be the closer going forward with Sewald in the last year of his contract too? So
the Ginkle ascension, and you can disagree with me if you want. It feels
sounds like a movie.
The Ginkle Ascension, now in theaters.
The Ginkle Ascension.
It feels reminiscent to Archie Bradley to me.
Hmm.
When he got that first opportunity to be the closer for this team. Granted, Archie's bring up with the organization was a little bit different. He was seen as a top prospect across Major League Baseball.
Starter.
When he was in the organization, he was seen as a starter. Kevin Ginkle, for the most part, and I don't have where he was drafted up in front of me, I apologize, but feels like he just almost came out of nowhere. Made the most of a very, very prime opportunity and has now taken the bull by the horns and ripped the bull down to the dirt and said, no, I'm the bull now, right? To going back to my point about Kevin Ginkle's got that dog in him, he's feisty. He fits kind of the mold of the closers that you remember from like the 90s, like the real gritty and grindy, rough and tough closers. Who was the closer that the Diamondbacks had a few years back who did he's famous for the gif where he does the deep breath and then he stares into your soul with the quick dart to the face?
That would be their bullpen coach, Mike Fetters.
Mike Fetters. Thank you. He's got a little bit of Fetters in him, right? He's got that intensity and he'll let it out when he's successful in the later innings.
That point is coming if he gets the save, that's for sure. You have the Fernando Rodney, he'll do the arrow.
And he's got the point to the sky.
He's got the point to the sky. Ginkle was drafted three times. So he was drafted in 2014 by the Giants.
Interesting.
Was drafted again in 2015 by the Red Sox. And then in 2016, out of the University of Arizona, he was drafted by the Diamondbacks in the 22nd round, which no longer exists because now there's only 20 rounds.
Right.
And yeah, so it's been a little bit of a different rise, but he became a top 30 prospect for them. And it just, you know, injuries, you know, weird seasons with the organization in 2020, 2021. He was left up for grabs essentially and stayed in the organization. And now he's going to be the closer.
If anything, the biggest tweak.
Maybe he might be the closer.
Maybe. We don't know yet. If anything, the biggest tweak that he made was not going so deep down when he's in the stretch. You know how he used to like really stick his butt out and squat down low before he came to set? Now he just kind of does like a little mini thing. Maybe that's the difference. Maybe that's all it took.
And with that, let's get into some preview stuff for the season.
Let's go.
For opening day weekend, because it is this Thursday. That is tomorrow from when we are recording this.
It's crazy.
They play four games against Colorado Rockies, then three games against the New York Yankees. And so
what an opening 7 days.
Oh, yeah.
You start with maybe your easiest competition in the National League, and then right after that is the most recognized name in Major League Baseball in the New York Yankees.
If you want to really promote it, you would say you start with a division rival and then the most
sorry, recognizable I did a poor name job in the major promoting. There apologies.
But yeah, it's here. So in the spirit of opening day being here, mm-hmm. I have 10 questions.
Okay.
For what to look for with this Diamondbacks team going into this year. Because last year, they did something that nobody from the outside thought that they were going to do, which is not only make the playoffs, but make a run to the World Series and become three games short of a championship.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're running back essentially the same team with a lot of pieces on top of it to build out the depth. At the same time, last year they were healthy. This year they're starting off the season with some injury adversity out the gate.
Mm-hmm.
So what constitutes potentially as a successful season for them. My first question is, what does year two Corbin Carroll look like? Because, oh man, did he blow away everybody's expectations in year one.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
a 25 home run season with 54 stolen bases to win the Rookie of the Year easily, without any sort of doubt. What does the second year look like? Is there a Julio Rodriguez sophomore slump, quote unquote, something that happens in there?
But
is
also he somebody still who, the face of their team, right?
But or is he somebody who has, you know, sort of this, you know, the mental fortitude to continue to adjust as the league adjusts to him? We saw it a little bit last year. He went a little bit of a funk in the middle, in the second half of the season, but he fought his way out of it and then was amazing early in the postseason for them. So
does
what
his
does
career
that look like?
Go and turn into what Ichiro was after his rookie season, or does his career turn after or turn into what Chris Coughlin, who was a rookie of the
Jesus.
Year, was after? Well, I could have said Chris Coughlin. I could have said Kyle Lewis. I went with Chris Coughlin. I felt like that one was more random enough of
I
won a Rookie of the Year award.
To say that that will not be the case.
We would hope so, right?
I like, would. I feel pretty safe that that would not be the case.
You don't just get the Rookie of the Year because you were average your rookie season, right? You got the Rookie of the Year award because you were the best rookie.
That's true, but the best rookie can mean different things in different years. Last year was a pretty good year for Rookie of the Year competition, and he blew everybody out of the water. So I feel pretty good saying he will not be the Chris Coughlin.
I'm not trying to
class.
Piss people off, I promise. I'm just trying to give examples of, like, these guys have won Rookie of the Year.
What is the sort of that next version? What is that next level that he could potentially get to?
Okay.
That's my first question.
Cool.
My next one is kind of interesting now because it's different. Can the young rotation take steps forward, especially in lieu of the Eduardo Rodriguez injury?
Bummer.
Now it's a little bit different, but it still stands because early in the season, they're going to be leaning on Ryan Nelson and Tommy Henry, at least for the foreseeable future, to help balance out that rotation with the top two in front. How long that lasts, I don't know. We'll see exactly when Montgomery gets in and when Rodriguez gets healthy and what exactly they want to do with those guys. We talked about that earlier. Can the D-backs remain one of the best defensive teams in baseball? Because that has been, again, that sort of ups their floor a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that a little bit. So that's my next one. My next one's a little fun. Will the D-backs recreate the chaos? I have no reason to believe they wouldn't be as aggressive on the base paths. You know, we'll see what the bunting. Sometimes the bunting drives you crazy, but sometimes they can bunt for hits and get guys on and steal second base.
Right.
That's just something a lot of teams can't afford to do. We'll see if so. Will they kind of have that same sort of energy with them with some of the new guys coming in? Because Eugenio Suarez, Jock Peterson, these are not guys who are going to necessarily drop down a bunt, steal second base, all that kind of stuff. But now with Dave McKay coaching them, does that look a little different?
It's interesting because I can't remember who pointed it out, but the Diamondbacks kind of somewhat pivoted from, they still obviously have Corbin Carroll and Alec Thomas is expected to be the starting center fielder, but they kind of pivoted a little bit away from the find your way on base and then just, you know, steal bases or
they
create
have some
havoc
thump
for the
in
infield.
There now.
A lot more thump with Suarez and Peterson and whenever Grandel Grichuk is healthy to go. Even Lourdes Gurriel Jr., like bringing him back and now making him the everyday left fielder kind of has established what this lineup is on a day in, day out. I mean, I think about Corbin Carroll's going to be at the top for most games. When it's a lefty, I assume he'll slot to second. But then after that, you've got Cattell. Gabby's got some thump. Christian Walker. Jock Peterson on most days, Gino, and now Lourdes. Like, that's a lot of thump in the middle of an order.
They have a lineup full of guys who could change the game in one swing.
Right.
Which is different. It's not, you know, last year they did a good job of this, of, you know, sort of producing runs in different kinds of ways. Will their run production increase by having more guys who can go yard? Will it kind of change the way that they look as a team and how other teams view them?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be one.
And I think the chaos is going to start more from the bottom of the order now because Alec and Geraldo are going to be 8 and 9 for most of the games this season.
Yeah, if Thomas and Perdomo get on base ahead of the top of the order, then the wheels literally will start moving. I had another question on here was how will the newcomers impact the lineup? That's how the newcomers will impact the lineup.
Boom.
We'll
look at us.
Are Brandon Pfaadt's biggest lumps behind him? Because obviously he's going to be a key to this. A little bit less so now because Jordan Montgomery there and they have the depth to kind of manage. If, you know, somebody has a bad couple of weeks, what happens if somebody has a bad month? Can you kind of
Can we tangent off of that question for just a second?
Sure.
Would you prefer that they keep Ryan and Tommy up in the major leagues for the sake of keeping them on the roster? Or would you rather them be in AAA with Reno and get regular starts in a rotation?
Yeah, just in case. I'm sure they're going to have at least one of those guys do that.
Okay.
Maybe you split them. I don't know. and one can be a long man. I think, you know, and maybe Bryce Jarvis is like so good in that role early on that they were like, okay, let's keep like, the
we
starting
have to keep
pitching
him
depth.
In the bullpen, yeah.
We'll see. But there are plenty of options. These are good problems to have, and there are plenty of options going forward with that. But I imagine at least one of them would be, you know, if that's the direction that they want to go in, kind of ready and in waiting,
okay,
essentially. But yeah, will Brandon Fotts can kind of continue this ascension? Breakout is weird because on one hand, it's like, was his postseason run his breakout because he was so good in those games going into Philadelphia and getting a win in, you know, that Dodgers
hostile
game.
Environment, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it's so was that his breakout or do we have to see it over a full season? I guess there's kind of different versions of what a breakout is. But yeah, obviously last year, when you look at the totality of his rookie season, as low as you can get and as high as you can get. So what does it look like if he's in the rotation for a full year? Will the bullpen hold up without Sewald? We kind of went over that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
How do the Diamondbacks match up with their National League opponents?
I feel better about them now than I did 24 hours ago.
Absolutely.
Which is the easiest thing to say, right?
We went over the West, but when you look at the National League as a whole, there's a lot of teams that you can kind of see in the middle, right? The Braves and the Dodgers you'd think would be, you know, the top two teams by record just based on how they did last year and what they did this offseason.
Yeah.
But then you look at sort of who could potentially be in that next tier. We did this a little bit during the West preview, but like the Phillies, the Diamondbacks, the Padres, you know, losing a lot of talent but getting Cease, the Giants doing everything that they did, the Cardinals getting Sonny Gray, who's injured at the start of the season, but he's, you know, going to be in there.
I think I'm more down on St. Louis than most people would be. I think people are expecting to bounce back. I don't necessarily see it.
I mean, they could have gone out and gotten Jordan Montgomery and instead got Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson. These are innings eaters, but yeah, guys who are not coming off of the best seasons, especially Lynn.
The team in the National League as a whole I'm most curious about, I think, is the Cubs. Not only did they retain Cody Bellinger, they're bringing in Shota Imanaga from overseas. They got Craig Counsell as their manager. Like, they were able to swoo a division rival manager out of Milwaukee and into Chicago.
Absolutely.
And the biggest thing for the Cubs last year was they had a plus run differential, but they absolutely crapped down the stretch of the season when they were in prime position for a wild card spot. Craig Counsell's not going to let that happen as the manager of this Cubs team. They're the ones that I'm watching the most in the National League.
The Diamondbacks beat the Cubs 6 times out of 7, and that was a...
That's always good.
That and what they were able to do against the Reds, another fascinating team for the season, yep, was a big reason why the Diamondbacks made the postseason. And the Reds are another one. A lot of young talent. They bring in Frankie Montas. They bring in some guys to kind of lift the floor. Hamer Candelario. And then you kind of look at the East and the Marlins, their rotation's banged up and that's their strength. So
they
I'm not sure what
they
to
also
expect.
Went through the front office change.
Yeah.
And I don't know how relieving, not relieving, she walked away. Kim Ang leaving is going to affect how the team's set up. But
they're going with like the Rays thing because they get Peter Bendix from Tampa Bay and they want to do that.
She set the roster up better after the trade deadline last year. Like they've retained Josh Bell and Jake Berger. Those are big bats in the middle of that order. But the most of it is just kind of, I look at it and they're probably going to be carried by young pitching again, but the young pitching has been so inconsistent year in and year out.
I mean, it's a pretty talented rotation, but it's banged up at the start of the season.
Yeah.
We'll see. The Mets, we talked about this a little bit beforehand as a potential, like, why didn't they go out and get Jordan Montgomery? Good lineup. Lots of questions with the rotation. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of teams in the middle. And how do the Diamondbacks stack up? It feels like they've built enough depth, especially on the rotation side, that you would think maybe they're going to be on the upper echelon of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, obviously, we'll see. A lot of teams, there's not a lot of teams who you know are like not going for something. The Mets, even like, you know, kind of reshuffling everything, they go out and get JD Martinez. That's a good lineup.
Yeah.
Last one. What is a successful season for the Diamondbacks?
Oof. More wins than last year and retaining wild card position, I think, is the simplest answer. They won 84 games last year, backed their way into the postseason as the sixth seed in the National League. I want better than that this year. Will I be upset if they don't win the division? No, not necessarily. I kind of expect the Dodgers to win the division again. Would I be disappointed if they gotten into the playoffs as a sixth seed with the same amount of wins as last year? Yeah, because they spent this offseason trying to improve. As you mentioned, stretch out the depth. Like, this team should be at least 4 wins better than they were last year. So put them at 88 for me.
88 wins 88 in a wild card
and
spot.
A better wild card spot than they were last year.
They're going to deal with some injury stuff early, so we'll see how they handle it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not the easiest schedule in the world early in the season either when they will be dealing with that. You know, the Rockies are first, but then it's the Yankees. They'll face the Braves.
The Orioles early in the year, too.
Then when they come back home, it's the Cubs and Cardinals. And then, you know, they also have a road series against the Giants in April. So it's going to be a tough schedule early. Yeah, I think making the postseason again is a big deal. Just to sort of establish yourself as a team that can get here year in and year out with this core. And then you continue to build from that. That's what I would think it would be. Just getting into the post. Obviously, if they get in with like 79 wins and there's some weird season where everybody has 75 wins, that's a little different.
Sure.
You'd like to win more games than last year. But at the same time, that's going to be something to look for.
Right.
I had a bonus one. What's Jordan Lawler's role going to be eventually on this team? That's a big deal, but that's something that we can talk about down the road.
Can I double down and say what's Blaise Alexander's role going to be? Because
we'll see.
We haven't heard anything officially on him yet.
The roster will come out in a few moments. That's why I'm not going to like go so deep into the weeds of the roster because that'll be outdated. It's just timing-wise, this is when we can do it.
Yeah.
So we'll see if Blaise Alexander makes the roster or not. Obviously, he's been the hot hand all spring training. Prospect who could
do
a lot.
Hit a ridiculously far home run yesterday.
Yeah.
Into the
little TGI Fridays, the cold beer and cheeseburgers. unbelievable. He's been amazing this spring. So we'll see if he's sort of that versatility infielder. Before we go, because stuff is happening.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get over to Chase Field, and you know, opening day is just like less than 2 days away. It's unbelievable. It's tomorrow. Let's do a little bit opening day trivia, and I'm gonna kind of go kind of rapid fire with you.
I like
so,
this. Okay.
I figured let's do some Diamondbacks. It's kind of trivia, but it's sort of like the all opening day team.
Okay.
For the Diamondbacks, throughout their history.
Okay.
And I'm going to go rapid fire. It gives you an excuse if you're sitting there going, for like 15 seconds and you can't get it if it's obvious. This gives you the excuse. Oh, it's too fast. I couldn't think of it.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you like 5 seconds before I cut you off before
Perfect.
Each one. I'm going to name a position. You tell me who started the most games there on opening day
Ooh.
In Diamondbacks history.
Okay.
So
don't ask me catcher.
We're going to start there though.
Oh, boy.
This one should be more obvious.
Than I know the answer. His bobblehead's over here somewhere. Miguel Montero.
There it is. I think it's like right over your head.
There he is.
Miguel Montero.
Miggy.
He is number 5. First base.
Paul Goldschmidt.
Easy the one. Walker's catching up to him a little bit, but Paul Goldschmidt is the guy.
Will he surpass him this year, kind of catching up, or no?
No, okay. Not yet. Goldschmidt has 7. Walker's about to be 5.
Gotcha.
Second base.
Cattell?
Yep.
Okay.
Cattell is 4. It's about to be 5. Which is kind of crazy to think about because he has also started in other positions.
He's been here since, what, 2017 now? Man, that's crazy to think about.
First trade that Mike Hazen made was for Cattell Marte
darn good
and Taiwan
one.
Walker. Yeah, it worked out pretty well. Third base. This one's harder.
Oof.
This one's harder because it's an older player.
Matt Williams.
Yep.
Yay, look at me.
Just edges out Jake Lamb.
Wow.
Shortstop.
Jake Lamb. Council?
No.
Darn. If I had to give it one more guess while quickly thinking about it, Tony Womack?
Nope, he was 2nd.
Okay, hit me.
You're forgetting Nick Ahmed.
Oh.
There you go.
Wow, I'm such a bad Diamondbacks trivia person. Oh, no.
You got the right. I mean,
I'm sorry,
you're doing
Nick.
Pretty well before you got to shortstop.
I was doing pretty
That's
well.
That's Giants opening day potential starting shortstop.
That's funny, too,
well.
Because I'm like, don't give me catcher, and then I figured out who the catcher was in moments. All right, I'm ready.
Left field.
David Peralta.
No.
Really?
It's more obvious than that.
More? Gonzo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Center field is a tie. I'll give you the points if you get one of them.
Finley?
Yep.
Okay.
Can you get the other?
Finley and Pollock.
No. It's close, though.
Inciarte.
No.
Pass.
Chris Young.
CY. Oh, man. I'm spacing on, like, the sweet spot of when I started loving baseball. I'm embarrassed.
Right field, similarly, there's 2. So, if you get one.
Why am I spacing on right field?
A little less. One of them's fairly obvious. The other one's a little less obvious.
Is that David Peralta?
No. Peralta's 2nd for left fielders, by the way.
2nd for left. Okay. Yeah, call me out. I don't want to take all day.
Danny Bautista.
Okay.
And Justin Upton. There you go. That's the one.
So I missed on Chris Young, Justin Upton, and Nick Ahmed. Wow.
There you go.
DH, is it Lourdes Gurriel Jr.?
No, he's never started an opening day game at DH.
Really?
I'll get the DH. Let's go to starting pitcher first.
Okay. Most opening day starts as starting pitcher.
This one should be pretty easy.
Is it Webby?
No.
Oh, RJ.
Yeah.
Okay.
Webby second.
Okay.
DH, can you name the three designated hitters who have started on opening day for the Diamondbacks? So there's been three. There's about to be four. So and they're all going to be different players.
So 2020, would that have been...
I wouldn't start with 2020. Okay. I think the other two were easier.
So last year, that would have been... Was it Kyle Lewis?
It was. Leadoff man against the Dodgers because they started a lefty.
They started a lefty. Go figure. 2022.
Kyle Lewis, by the way, unbelievable spring training last year. Just one of those like guy who absolutely raked in spring training, and it didn't
really
work
out. Not much in the majors, unfortunately.
It was a weird season. He had
that
illness.
It was a Matt-for-Matt trade, one-for-one, right? Like, here, you take our guy that didn't work out. We'll take yours. 2022 DH.
This should also be.
Was this the year after the 54-win team, right?
Yes.
So they probably didn't do much in the offseason. Was it Escobar?
Nope.
Was it...
He wasn't there anymore.
Okay. Was it David Peralta?
No. You're going to hate yourself.
I probably will. Hit me.
National Beer Day.
Oh, my gosh. It was Seth Beer.
The walk-off.
Hit the walk-off home run.
There you go.
I left before he hit the home run.
You left. You were at that game and you left.
I was at that game and we left early because they were down 3-0 going into the bottom of the ninth against Josh Hader. Like,
you
what was a
horrid sports fan.
I know. I'm the worst.
Absolutely.
Actually, I don't even think Josh Hader closed that game.
No, wasn't it Suarez? Robert Suarez? I think it was Robert Suarez, right?
Might have been.
Yeah.
It had to have been a righty because no way Seth Beer was hitting that off a lefty.
And then in 2020, it was Christian Walker.
Okay. So who was first base?
Jake Lamb.
Jake Lamb?
Yep.
Wow. Whose idea was it to make Christian Walker the DH?
It turns out
I mean, thinking about now, right?
But those are your most popular starters on opening day for the Arizona Diamondbacks.
How about that?
National holiday. It is tomorrow.
Can I throw in one more thing, actually, before we wrap up? Because I'm just seeing it now. Dodgers just extended Will Smith 10 years as their catcher.
Well, that's interesting, too, because they have so many catching prospects.
Yeah. I mean, they traded away Keibert Ruiz. Do they
still
have
Dalton
Cartaya?
Yeah, they still have Cartaya. They still have Dalton Rushing. They have a lot of they have a lot of depth there.
Do they still have A.J. Ellis? No,
they do not. But they do have Austin Barnes. Forks up.
Forks up, indeed. All right, I'll let you close now. That was all I had.
That's it. Speaking of that, Diamondbacks, Rockies, Chase Field, Thursday night, Zach Gallen versus Kyle Freeland. Oh my gosh, I can't believe it's already here. That's crazy. Granted,
I love it.
It's one of those pushes and pulls kind of thing because it's like, oh, I can't believe it's already here, but also spring training has lasted like 6 years. So
this would be a day as if I wasn't working in this field, I would, you know, take the day off and enjoy opening day, but I work in the field.
I wish I could do that, but then there you go. We're going to be there.
Exactly.
For Mitch Reldes, Alex Weiner, this was the Ain't No Fang
About
podcast on Arizona Sports. Happy opening day, everybody. We'll have all your coverage on ArizonaSports.com.